really, I think success is going to come down to understanding yourself and others. You know, how you can be useful, how you can contribute.
This is Max Q, a podcast by Peabody's Launchpad office dedicated to demystifying what life is like after graduation. Every episode, we sit down with a recent Peabody alum to get their take on what life is like for a working artist in today's world. Jobs, work-life balance, finances, time management. We discuss that and more on the Max Q podcast.
This is Robin McGinnis, and today I'll be speaking with pianist, teacher, and entrepreneur Sahun Sam Hong, who is currently finishing up his doctorate at Peabody. Since leaving Baltimore, Sam built on the skills he gained from Peabody's performer referral service to grow his business as a freelancer, including starting his own concert design agency, Subito Arts. In this interview, we talk about how he built these skills, how he approaches freelancing, and what suggestions he has for current students. I'm here with Sam Hong. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. I've got a couple of questions we go through with all of our guests, and I think I want to start off with tell us a little bit about what your life looks like right now, and you can take that as both what that looks like with coronavirus and maybe giving us a picture of what it looked like before things changed so drastically.
Yeah. So, well, first off, thanks for having me. And well, I moved to Boston, Massachusetts over last summer of 2019 after I finished my coursework, doctorate coursework at Peabody. And I've been freelancing here and doing some performing and teaching. Recently, I started my first adjunct position at a small private university here near Boston. And so I've been teaching for my for the first semester in my career. So I've been having a lot of different interesting activities. I'm also a collaborative pianist, staff pianist with limited hours at New England Conservatory, mostly for string players. And I'm still pursuing some solo piano competitions and trying to organize concerts. So really just putting myself out there and seeing what things, you know, go well and are taken well, and trying to just combine people's demand with what I would like to do artistically. And also in the meanwhile, I'm working to finish the doctorate degree, of course.
Right, of course. So I'm curious about, so you said that you just started an adjunct position. What was the journey like to get to that adjunct job? And this is your first higher ed position?
This is my first higher ed position. Actually, my students are non-majors, so it's non-major piano lessons. That's my only obligation. So it's not a major post. It was actually by referral from a friend of mine who taught there. Of course, I had to, you know, go through a formal background check and all this, you know, screening process as well. But it kind of opened my eyes a little bit to how much, you know, the reality of the situation and how much, you know, getting yourself out there and meeting people and participating in the community, how important that is in the search for these kinds of positions.
It seems that your perspective on meeting people or making connections with people or even quote unquote networking has changed a bit over the last couple of years. And I'm curious about how that has changed exactly and maybe what it changed from and what has become now, how you conceive of that.
I see. I would say that maybe it just means I've gotten better at quote unquote networking, as you say, but my idea of networking has changed from more of a intentional trying to meet people, like meet the good people, meet the people who are doing things, you know, more from that to just knowing everyone actually and just getting a general grasp of what's going on in a community and what people need, and understanding where what people need and what I want to do and what I can do well intersect. But it's more of an ongoing process rather than just a motivation based thing where I read a book about networking and decide, okay, I'm going to go meet everyone, you know, and I'm going to get myself out there and I'm going to give away business cards. You know, I don't think it's like that. And I think that kind of, you know, when the networking seems too explicit or direct, I think it's less pleasant, certainly.
I'm going to circle back a little bit to your time. I know you're still finishing up your doctorate, but your time at Peabody. And I'm wondering, I know that you have interacted with the career office for a long time while I've been employed there. And I'm kind of curious about if there's any of the things that came out of your work with the career office that may have helped prepare you for, I'm thinking about this adjunct position, but perhaps also maybe changed your perspective on networking.
Wow. I mean, I really frequented the career office, you know, ever since I first came to Peabody in 2013. I mean, it's been a holistic growth process for sure. And, you know, when I came into the office, you know, I always had some random thought that I had for the day and got some feedback about that. Actually, most of my queries going into the career office were about organizing concerts and trying to meet presenters and get connected to them. Actually, you know, at the point that I was going into the career office very often, I was not really looking for higher ed position. I mean, I thought of it more as a long-term goal. But honestly, I mean, I'm definitely pretty lucky to have gotten this. But it was not really in my sights, to be totally honest. I was trying to do more organizing independent performances and creating concert experiences. And that was my main focus in frequenting the office in my many years.
So that's interesting. So I guess I to follow up on that, has there been you know, a significant way that you know, either since you left Baltimore or left Peabody or maybe since you started school, that your goals have kind of changed?
When I was still in school and had less experience interacting with the classical music concert community, I thought it was a simple matter of I come up with a really great musical idea and perform it really, really well, get some really great people to play with me, and, you know, we make some CDs and we send them out and it's going to go well. You know, it was really a unilateral, one-way approach. And I guess this is really similar to my comment about networking in that, you know, I now understand that your whole approach to this should be a little more holistic. And, you know, instead of saying, what do I have to do to get these concerts? What do I have to do to get these gigs? You know, rather than doing that, I really try to provide value to everyone who's involved in anything that I'm trying to produce, right? So that would be the biggest shift, just to understand how to be a person who combines benefiting others with benefiting yourself. And I think it's actually really a tough process to understand that. You know, most people you see who are kind of the maybe entrepreneurial type, I'm talking about in the music circle, right? You kind of get the impression that they wake up at 5 a.m. I mean, nothing against this, right? I've had lots of stints of this kind of thing too, and that's very good. You know, motivation's good, but you get the sense that they wake up a little too early, you know, and they go, you know, they're trying a little too hard, and you know, I think that's a very good thing. I think it's good to find yourself through that kind of workflow, you know, 14 hours in the practice room. Okay, maybe you transition from 14 hours in the practice room during your conservatory days to, you know, 5 hours a day trying to work on business and music. Fine. But I think there does need to be that growth out of that, because that's, while that is finding yourself, it's very self-centric. And, you know, knowing yourself is really important. But then there's got to be that shift to where you start to focus on the needs of the people you work with and the needs of you know, your fans and presenters, etc. Employers as well, actually. And this is really, I think, relevant during our coronavirus situation, you know, getting experience teaching online, which I hope people listening to this podcast are getting on board with.
Yeah. And I love this idea of, you know, just making, trying to figure out how you can be helpful to others. I'm curious. I know we've talked in some of our own conversations about you working to function as a contractor, to pull together, you know, larger ensembles for events. I'm kind of curious how that business has grown for you and how that's been going.
It's been definitely a very interesting process. You know, I have waves of work on that where sometimes I'm going crazy, you know, on that with all my might. And sometimes I just want to, you know, play the piano for a month and just forget about all that. So in the beginning, I wanted to tackle all sorts of contracting, you know, from wedding gigs to, you know, corporate events to chamber music concerts. You know, I never did anything really large scale above 6 or 7 people. But it was kind of an anger phase about capitalism where, you know, I got angry that if I were the one getting hired, that means someone was making money on top of that. That's kind of how I felt. And I thought, I want to be the person taking advantage of all of these situations. Later, I realized that, you know, all of this takes a lot of energy. And, you know, it's not possible to just take over everything. You know, you have a limited amount of energy and anything you choose to do is going to take your full effort. And so I started to focus more on chamber music concerts, which for a large part of my musical life has been the primary. And so now I'm just using all the resources I have to promote, you know, new and interesting chamber music concerts. You know, I think having new ideas and fun visions is kind of bringing interesting combinations of musicians together, I'm looking forward to just doing those projects again once the COVID-19 situation gets a little bit better. You know, of course, lots of concerts got canceled, the bulk of which were in March, April, May, which was our inaugural season for some of my newer organizing activities. But we'll be starting again in 2021.
Yeah, that's hard. Yeah, there have been a couple of people I've talked to who've, you know, had new initiatives that they're starting up this spring that had either, you know, like one concert, and it's hard to have built up that momentum and then just kind of have it all deflate. I'm going to go back to you said you did a lot of kind of more gigging in terms of kind of doing weddings and other, you know, smaller events early on. I'm curious about how that, if we can call it, you know, informal non-concert performance experience, did that affect the way that you performed? Did that bring anything else to the way you kind of made music?
Yeah, definitely. I think in the end, we are making music, and I think what you know, gigging non. What was the word you used?
Non-formal concert performances or something like that. Yeah.
Non-formal concert performances. In any case, you know, you kind of learn to present yourself as a, you know, cohesive unit, as a, you learn what your image is as a performer. And, you know, through your experiences in being contracted and perhaps organizing some performances of your own, what you learn is that there's a reason, you know, you start to understand that there's a reason people would enjoy your music or want to follow you, you know. And then once you do that, you identify that and you just keep doing it. You keep doing it until you don't stop growing because of that reason.
That's a really interesting idea of, you know, finding the thing that people find interesting about your performance or your music. And I wanna pull that out for a second, because I think in my experience, I struggle with that. I see a lot of other musicians struggling with trying to figure out what's the thing that they offer that's unique. And I'm wondering if you're willing to share a little bit about what that process of discovery was like and maybe what you found.
I think a lot of that comes from your perception of yourself as an artist, for one. But I think a lot of that also is found in the kind of conversations you have with your audiences after performances. You know, they usually say, it was great, you know, and you say thank you, you know, and then you grab a cookie because you don't know what to say next at the reception, you know. But I think it's really important to create that conversation, to make that dialogue, to understand what's going on in your audience's head. You know, people actually don't have to have music, but there's a reason they're there. You know, there is kind of, you know, a deeper need for music, right? It makes us feel calm. It kind of, you know, puts your mind in a meditative state, you know, however you want to look at that. You know, so there's definitely that. And I also think we can learn about our own musical or you know, identity as a performer by your own weaknesses, you know, by your perceived weaknesses anyway. And, you know, I think some kind of combination of those things, because your identity, you know, in terms of weakness, I think is kind of the antithesis of your identity in terms of strength. And so sometimes in seeing the opposite of your weakness, you can find your greatest strengths.
I'm going to go back to something we were kind of talking about earlier, where you're talking about particularly the kind of 14-hour-a-day practice schedule. And it sounds like you've lived that life, but you've found something else now. So I'm kind of curious about what does your current schedule look like, and, you know, how you keep kind of a balanced schedule and what you keep things balanced between.
Well, currently I am a pianist without a piano. That's going to change soon. But, you know, so I'm practicing on a digital piano that I'm pretty happy with. I feel like I can get good work done on. I'm not sure if I'm supposed to say what kind, you know, but we can put that later in the text or something. But, you know, over time, I started realizing that 14 hours a day was not sustainable. I mean, if you need 14 hours a day to get it done, that might work for you, you know, in the first couple of years of your performing career. But, you know, eventually you have to optimize that time, because, I mean, physically, right? I actually was injured the beginning of this year and had to take a lot of time off. And it's, you know, now what going on four or five months, and I'm finally starting to feel in tip-top shape, you know, just kind of tendonitis in my right arm. But I started to learn just what was necessary, what was not necessary. You know, you start to learn where your saturation point of practice is. And I think that's different for everyone, or different for different projects. But I mean, I think people do have to just let go of the mindset that, you know, more time is better. I think we're all getting, you know, these days, the musical culture is a little better now. You know, you see some workout motivational videos that say no days off. No excuses. Okay, fine. But I mean, if you take no days off, you know, if you don't take rest days, you're 100% going to get injured, you know, which is obviously detrimental to your progress. So, you know, in terms of my personal schedule now, you know, I probably spend 3 or 4 hours. If I have to really prepare for something big coming up, then I might up it to, you know, 7 hours of practice. But I try not to go over that, you know, because, I mean, mental health is really important. You know, when I was a student living on campus, there wasn't really much else to do but just practice. And so I definitely indulge myself there. But, you know, as I get older and work and, you know, understand why I'm doing what I'm doing and just kind of have, I keep saying the word holistic, but I think it's a really important thing to, you know, start to understand. As we exit the student stage and start to kind of build a balanced life and career.
So to kind of jump off of that holistic, holistic career, holistic set of skills, I mean, are there, outside of your musical training, are there other skills that have had a large impact on your career? And how did you build those skills?
Yeah, I think it's becoming more apparent than ever that having non-musical, I mean, by non-musical, I mean outside of music, right? Extra musical skills are, that's really, really critical in building value as a human being. You know, I am seeing among my colleagues a big divide starting to form, you know, between the people who are willing to try new things, who are willing to learn. You know, I myself learned a lot during this pandemic, you know, about audio editing for, you know, online chamber music collaborations, you know, even MIDI sequencing, because I'm using a high quality digital instrument, like sampled piano instrument alongside my keyboard, you know, website editing, even arranging, which has been kind of becoming a second career, but you know, that I don't need to go too in depth into that. But yes, audio editing, just general, you know, video editing, anything, you know. But there are the people who just want to play the notes or you know, just make sounds on their instrument, and then there are the people who want to be a bit more, you know, helpful. But I think these days it's really, you know, it's not excusable. It's inexcusable to just only make music and only make sounds on your instrument. I call that, you know, the people who just want to be a note making machine, you know, but that's not acceptable. I'm sorry. That sounds a bit harsh, but.
No, that's, I'm curious. So, I mean, jumping off what you said about technology, I mean, I think we've all, or many of us have been picking up skills rapidly in the past couple months, just dealing with various kinds of tech. But was there, you know, a spot for technology in your career before that? And, you know, you said that, you know, the kind of the audio editing and parts have grown, but kind of what was your relationship to technology before we became hyper-reliant on it?
So I've always enjoyed using technology, but I didn't really have quality equipment most of my life. I'm still gathering equipment because of what's going on in our world now. But, you know, I was always had a pretty okay affinity with coding and things like that to try to just make my life easier. You know, all of that was pretty much born out of, you know, either just pure curiosity to learn how the internet or computers worked, or laziness to try to automate some of my, you know, mundane tasks. I wouldn't say I was a total newbie with technology, but obviously this has really accelerated in recent times.
We've talked a bit about kind of contracting and gigging. And I'm curious, since you have so much experience with this, I think one thing that a lot of people have anxiety around is negotiating fees. I'm wondering what dealing with negotiating with clients has been like for you, and if that's evolved over time.
Man, that's always a tough one, isn't it? I mean, and I think musicians are probably notoriously bad at it. I don't feel, you know, that strong at negotiation myself, but, you know, I found that actually building your identity in terms of what fees you charge were also fueled by past experiences. You know, I think fake it till you make it, okay, that's good too. But, you know, you start to feel comfortable with what you can actually get as a fee, right? And, you know, I found that actually the best way to feel comfortable negotiating was to actually have a lot of different things that you have planned with your budget. You know, there's no way to feel solid about what price you're quoting unless you can back that up. And I think it's best to be honest. I think people can definitely. People are pretty good at reading, you know, when the whole point of the negotiation process is that you're trying to read each other and who's bluffing and, you know, who's giving an honest price. But I think it's okay in the beginning to just experiment with giving different numbers, you know, because we're freelancers after all. And so, you know, we're not set to, if you're a freelancer, you know, you're not set to a wage. And so, you know, you can definitely feel free to experiment and take principles from, you know, from other mentors in different fields who teach negotiation. You know, I've definitely watched my fair share of those kinds of content online. You know, people who say, oh, I tripled my fee and so did my clients, you know, something like that. But I mean, I don't, you know, not, some things are, of course, not going to be useful to us. But yeah, I think it's an open field. I really think the most important thing is just not be scared and just go for it and see what happens.
Can I drill down just on one bit of what you were saying? You mentioned backing up your fee. Could you detail a little bit more by how you go about like backing up what your fee is and showing the client that that's worthwhile?
Yeah. So since most of my experience has been organizing chamber music concerts, you can really just break it down as you would break down a budget in a grant application or anything of that sort. So, you know, if you're quoting, you know, let's say $1,000 for a group, you know, it's good to just tell, you know, your client, you know, it's $1,000 and tell them what it goes towards. You know, I mean, it's even okay to include your commission in there, I think. You know, it's, you know, let's say $250 per person, and, you know, there's a 20% commission for administrative fees, and that's what it is, right? Simple as that. I think a good breakdown of the budget is something where after stating the budget, you would be able to say, simple as that, you know, because it's just the truth, right? It needs to be truthful. You know, if you're shady about it, it's not going to go well because people can smell that from a mile away.
What advice do you have for current students? And feel free to interpret that in our current environment with the COVID crisis.
I guess the best way to try to give advice is to keep it simple, right? I'm talking about the way I'm about to give advice, and so I'm going to try to keep it short. I think if I could keep it, you know, concise into something memorable, I would say try and be a useful human being. you know, really, I think success is going to come down to understanding yourself and others. You know, how you can be useful, how you can contribute. Because, I mean, that's what it comes down to in the end. And, you know, everything, you know, artistry, I guess, even artistry and, you know, the kinds of performances that you're going to take part in, you know, your value as a musician, your friendships, everything is going to revolve around, you know, how we affect each other, how we benefit each other. Yeah, be a useful human being. Spoken like the blunt Sam Hong from 2013.
I'll do my best to be a useful human being. All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat this afternoon, and best of luck with getting your hands on a real piano.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Robin. Yeah. Please look out for some interesting videos once all that comes in the next months.
Will do. We'll leave you with a clip from a recent live stream performance of Sam playing his own arrangement of Schumann's Carnival with Ensemble 132. You can find a link to the full performance in the episode notes.